Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 706. It's the 9th of February 2017. On the podcast today, I have Charles Cully Kavanagh, who is Vice President of Finance, and Domingo Mata, Vice President of Engineering, Highland Natural Resources, that's HNR, talking about their core projects. I also have Mark Irwin of Boss Global Holdings, talks about his appointment today as Group Chief Operating Officer. I also have on the podcast small cap commentator Doc Holliday talking about Galileo Resources, Oxford Pharma Science, Concha, and China Africa Resources. Plus, successful private investor Smudge Dan talks about the following stocks: URU Metals, React Energy, which is now ECTEC, that's EQT, Braveheart Investments, and Infrastrata. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets this morning. And I got to say, the number one has broken the record.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Charles Kavanagh, Vice President of Finance, and Domingo Mata, Vice President of Engineering at Highland Natural Resources. That's HNR ticker. Guys, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much, Justin. We're happy to be here.
Yeah,
thanks for having us.
Yes, well, we've spoken before, and before we go on, I say, Charles, you'd like to be called Cully, is that right?
Yeah, that's my nickname. That's how I've always gone.
Yeah, so if I do say Cully, I mean Charles, by the way. Guys, thanks for joining me. Now, I'm aware of Highland Natural Resources. I've had you on before, and I'm sure listeners have heard of you before. But for people not aware of your business, can you sort of sum it up in a couple of minutes? What is Highland Natural Resources all about, please, guys?
Yeah, our pleasure. So this is Cully Kavanagh here. Highlands is a diversified company with three core projects focused on the oil and gas industry primarily. Our first project is the East Denver Niobrara project. So this is a shale project onshore in the U.S. We're drilling in the eastern portion of Colorado in an area that's very well developed. We have more than 30 wells right in our immediate vicinity that have been drilled by Conoco. Some of these wells are some of the most successful in all of Colorado in terms of shale wells in the Niobrara. We have at least six sections. We have farm in, and that's permitting us to drill up to 24 extended lateral horizontal wells. So these are big wells, they IP with very strong oil production rates, and we think they're economic right now, all the way down to probably about $40 a barrel for oil. So that's a really nice sort of low risk project where we have production all around us and a strong economic case. The next step there is financing, and we can talk about what we're doing on that front.
Yep.
And our second project is Helios 2. This is definitely a high upside project. We are dewatering a reservoir in Montana where we've identified that we have methane. We have 90% methane. And we have 0.33% helium, which we just released to the market earlier this month, the final results on a gas analysis. So that's exciting. We have what we were hoping to find in terms of the gas concentrations there. And now we're looking to prove the commercial and economic case by continuing the dewatering process. And then our third project is a suite of patent filings for a technology called DT Ultravert. And this technology has two applications. One is in refracking existing wells, and there are tens of thousands of candidates for that across the United States and all the major shale basins. And the second application, which we've just tested in the fourth quarter, is parent well protection. So this is a big emerging trend in the industry where when new wells are fracked near old producing wells, the old well gets hurt. They call it bashing, where it gets filled up with water from the new frack, mm-hmm. and the new well comes online in a and it underperforms the expectations in many cases. So we have a technology that can fix that, and we've tested it now twice, and the tests were really successful. So we're happy to share more detail on all three of those projects.
Excellent. So yeah, let's sort of break it down, because I know the last two RNSs you've released have given some more detail on these projects, and they've done a nice overview, and they've sort of really cut into the detail here. So let's start with East Denver, the highlights there. Can you put some figures around at the moment what's happening there?
Yeah, absolutely. So East Denver, like I said, it's a farm in on some acreage that is just immediately offsetting a number of producing wells, some of the most successful Niobrara wells in all of Colorado. And we have finalized our farm ins as of December that give us the acreage position we now have. And the next step is to get financing for this project. So these wells cost in the $5 to $5.5 million range. And we are looking to finance this with private equity. So we've started a competitive process, going to private equity providers that essentially they'll fund a majority and in some cases 100% of the drilling cost in exchange for some waterfall of the cash flow. So they might demand a certain portion up to a return target, and then after they hit that return target of, say, some percentage IRR, then the portion of their cash flows goes down a notch, and it might waterfall down several steps like that. And by doing it with private equity like this, we think we can get a significantly better cost of capital than going to the public markets, where, frankly, we don't think that this project has been fairly valued by the market. And so we're looking to do this with private equity. One of the benefits is also it avoids dilution at the PLC level. So we think there are a few positives that we're excited about on the private equity front. Like I said, we're fairly far into a competitive process at this point. And the next major news flow on the East Denver front would be announcing, hopefully, a successful financing. And then after that, it would be to start drilling.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the NPVs for East Denver. And it's quite impressive there. So for six wells, the minimum there, or the lower end of the range, is $23.4 million up to $30.1 million. And for the 24 wells, you've got from $96.6 million up to $124.6 million. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, so it depends if we drill a six-well program or our real goal is to drill the 24-well program. So that NPV, that's the asset-level NPV.
Yeah.
And then we'll get financing on that, and we think that this is a project where, if we're successful, clearly there is a big pie to divide up, and it could really move the needle for our company.
And did you say earlier that at current oil prices, these are economically viable here?
Yeah, so those NPVs were provided by RPS. They gave us a competent persons report, and you're reading the numbers directly from that CPR. And that was using RPS's their price deck, you know, starting in the fourth quarter of 2016 and what they expect oil prices to be. When we run our own internal economics, we typically just use a fixed oil price that's basically today's oil price or some number pretty near today's oil price. And we see similar NPV numbers. We think it's really competitive today. And even if you sensitize that down to lower oil prices and gas prices, we think this project performs pretty well all the way down to $40 oil, maybe even a little lower.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on to core project number two out of three here, and this is DT Ultravert. Tell us some more about this technology, please, if you could.
Excellent, Justin. Thank you. This is Domingo Mata, Vice President of Engineering. So, DT Ultravert, it's basically a process that uses gas as a diverter. So when you're in a reservoir and you produce, the areas where you're producing these liquids from, they drop pressure. And in the reservoir, then you create pressure sinks that are in the order of thousands of PSI. So when you're going to stimulate new wells or you're going to refract your existing wells, you have to deal with these type of pressure differentials. So the stimulation and the fracking process becomes very inefficient if you don't deal with them properly. So there have been a lot of development in the industry to try to address this issue, but we truly believe that DT Ultravert presents to the market the only option for an effective far-field diversion for the to address these pressure sinks. So that's how it came. The process consists of 20 patent fillings that were acquired by Highlands Resources. And we did our first trial last quarter. So we implemented the technology in the application called Patent Well Protection. This is one of the applications that Cully was mentioning. So in the patent well protection, what happens is that if you're in a field and you have existing wells, they create this pressure sink I was talking about. Mm-hmm. So when you come and stimulate your new wells, all the fluid wants to come to this pressure sink around the wellbore that is already producing. So that's not very effective because that's an area you're already draining. You want those fluids to actually go into the virgin reservoir. So we did this application in the Piance Basin. We had basically wells that were existing and they were fracking the new wells. So we have partnered in this technology with Schlumberger. So Schlumberger was injecting nitrogen to protect the existing wellbores that create a pressure shield. In the other location, we had Calfrac, which is also a partner to market the technology. And Calfrac was injecting in the new wellbores. Mm-hmm. So what happened is we were effectively diverting the fluid and pushing the fluid into the virgin reservoir full of hydrocarbons. So as a result of the test, we were able to, number one, protect the existing production in the existing wells, and number two, we improved the performance significantly on the new wells. So the new wells perform as among the best wells in the area. So it was a very successful result, and also it was repeatable. We did two wells and we got the exact same results, positive both in those wells. So as a result of this application, the industry got a lot of interest. We got approached by different magazines, and we have an article coming this month on the Oil and Gas Investor that describes a little bit more in detail the test and the issue we're trying to address.
Okay.
So what's next for DT is basically a strong marketing campaign. We're visiting a lot of companies sharing these results, and we're expecting to have significantly more trials in the near future.
Yeah, so but based on that, 75 days of production data there, it all seemed to be working well, did it?
It does. If you see the wells, both wells that we treated with DT Ultravert are among the best wells in the field. They are in the percentile 85, so significantly better than the average well in the area.
Okay, excellent stuff. All right, and go, you're busy boys. You've got a project, sort of a core project three is Helios 2. Could you give us some detail on that, please?
Yeah, I'd be more than happy to give some detail on that. So this is an area in southeast Montana where we've leased more than 105,000 acres. So this is why we think of this as a very high upside project, because if and hopefully when we prove the economics of this project, it's scalable across a very large area, which we already have leased. And there's even more to lease potentially outside of what we already have. So again, we're working on dewatering the reservoir. The last major news we released here was the concentration of gas that we've already produced from the wells we've drilled. So we have the 90% methane confirmed by gas analysis, and we have 0.33% helium confirmed in our latest gas analysis. We were originally targeting 0.36% helium, so we're pretty much right in line with our expectations. So the original hypothesis, at least in terms that we discovered gas and helium here, that was good to confirm. The next step is the dewatering process. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? The dewatering process is in a reservoir where you have a mixture of both water and gas, and the gas is dissolved in the water and also trapped as gas bubbles in some of the finer pore spaces. In these types of reservoirs, where there are analogous reservoirs around the world, we can talk about those. But basically, you have to pump down the water in the reservoir, and then the gas expands, the bubbles collide and begin to coalesce until, once you've pumped enough water, you create a continuous gas phase in a successful dewatering process, and you basically manufacture a gas field. In our case, it's not only gas, but also helium, which is quite valuable. In the United States, the government controls the sort of the benchmark price through an auction mechanism, and the latest auction price for helium, crude helium, which isn't even very pure, was $107 per MCF. So that's about you know, 30 plus times more valuable than methane right now. So we think of that as a nice upside to the core project, which is the methane economics.
Okay, and as far as the time frame for this is concerned, when are you hopefully going to be completing this or doing this?
Yeah, so the next step is to drill a injection well so we can pump water faster. And we're looking to do that in the spring once the snow melts and things thaw up there. So that should be spring time frame, maybe May. And then after drilling that, we think that 3 to 6 months of continuous dewatering would be enough to hopefully confirm the economic model for the broader play.
Yeah, and you know, I know nothing about the helium market whatsoever. So, you know, what are the kind of figures around this? What are the potential here?
Yeah, so it's actually a very fascinating market. The United States has a field called the Hugoton Field, which is mostly in Kansas and extends into Texas a bit. Mm-hmm. And that field has produced more than 2/3 of the U.S.'s helium for decades now. And it actually has been about 1/3 of a global supply. And the U.S. has been really a significant player in the global helium market. And that's partially because the U.S. has a federal reserve for helium. We set it up to actually supply helium for blimps back when blimps mattered for defense. And kind of more recently in the 90s, Congress woke up and realized that having $3 billion of debt for helium blimps and defense purposes didn't make too much sense anymore. So they mandated that this federal helium reserve be sold off and eventually dismantled. And that has caused a really quick run-up in the price of helium. So they've sold down from about 30 BCF of helium to now under 10 BCF. And it looks like within the next 5 years, that reserve, which has, again, been about 2/3 of domestic supply, will be completely dismantled. And so in the wake of that, the price of helium has had a pretty rapid run and has risen, like I said, to more than $107 per MCF. So, you know, this is a situation where the country and the industry is looking for alternate domestic supplies. They prefer to obviously have a domestic supply than import from abroad. And we may have here a replacement supply. You know, we're hoping to confirm that this is a viable commercial scale helium supply. And based on our RPS, we might have 2 billion cubic feet of helium just within a 3-township area, which actually is less than the full area we have leased now. We have about 105,000 acres leased, and that 2 BCF number comes from closer to 69,000 acres.
Yeah, okay. And of these three projects, is there one that's more advanced than the others, or is there one you prioritize, or do they run in tangent with each other?
You know, I think that in terms of near-term news flow, what might be most exciting is East Denver, because this really is an opportunity to begin generating positive cash flow for the company potentially, and we just need to get that financing done and then begin drilling wells. So realistically, it's possible that within 2017 we have some significant revenues coming into the company and some exciting results from oil and gas drilling.
Excellent. Well, guys, thanks for giving us an overview there of your projects there. So at Vox Markets here on the podcast every day, I do highlight the top 5 most followed companies on our platform. And so what I'd like to offer you to do now is to give us 3 reasons why someone now who's not following Highland Natural Resources should hit that follow button on your page, please.
Absolutely. So, Justin, the first reason I will give our investors is the diversified portfolio we have. We talk about 3 projects. They all have different risk and upside potential. I'm going to start with East Denver, which is a low risk. These are wells that are producing 120 to 150,000 barrels of oil the first year. They're in an area with a lot of geological control, so it's fairly low risk. Then we have the DT Ultravert, which is a technology arm that Highlands offer. We're approaching the industry and we're getting already a lot of resonance in the message. And we have Helios too, which could be, you know, a potential development of 100,000 acres and secure a helium supply for the US market. So
then I would say another reason is just near-term catalysts and potential news flow. You know, we have among these 3 projects, there are important milestones that we're hoping to hit here in 2017, and each one of those milestones we think could be a catalyst and an interesting event to be watching out for if you're tracking the stock. And then I would just say that, you know, really in terms of what can make the company succeed, it's back to Domingo's point a little bit for the third point here. which is that any one of these projects, if they succeed, could really make the company, quote unquote. They're all of a scale sufficient to really have a big impact. So we think that it's an interesting story where any one of those three platforms might help us go to the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, guys, you've got a lot going on there, and so I do look forward to chatting to you next time when you have some news out, and I very much appreciate you coming on. Thank you very much. Speak soon, hopefully, Cully and Domingo. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks for having us.
Thanks very much for the opportunity, Justin. Appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Mark Uren, Group Chief Operating Officer of BOS Global Holdings. That's BOS ticker. Mark, thank you for joining me.
And thank you for having me on, Justin.
That's all right. Now, I've had Michael, of course, on the podcast several times. It's nice to have, even though Michael's very sharp, slick, and nice to chat to, it's always nice to have a change of voice on the podcast.
Of course.
So first and foremost, Mark, for people not aware of what you do at BOS or the company itself, can you give a brief summary as to what BOS Global Holdings is all about, please?
Yes, so BOS Global is a company that is dedicated to delivering software that helps productivity and efficiency in the workplace. Specifically targeting knowledge workers.
Yeah, okay. Now, you've had a bit of news out today. I've got to admit, I've not seen this. Can you take us through what the news is all about, please, Mark?
Yeah, so the announcement today was around a change in the management of the organisation. I am moving from a non-executive director position to take an executive director position, and for those that would like a little bit more detail, that means that I'll be working daily in the company, helping achieve its objectives. And in that role, I will be the Chief Operating Officer for the group. The other part of the announcement is the appointment of Murray Burton. Murray's also moving from a non-executive director position to an executive director position and taking charge of BOS 360 work patterns, which is our most important initiative this year.
Excellent stuff. So can you tell us why this is happening and the thought processes behind this?
Sure. Look, I think it's a natural evolution in the development of the organisation. My role is to pack in behind Michael, for want of a better term, and help build out the capability of the organisation so that we can deliver on the promise of the software that we're developing. Murray's a very senior executive in his own right and is providing us with real stakeholder and advocacy for the platform BOS 360. And again, it's all around providing individuals, teams and organisations with the tools to maximise their efficiency.
Yeah, and of course 2017 is quite an exciting year for BOS Global Holdings. You're releasing your 360 suite there. And so your background, tell us a bit about your background, Mark, and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. So I've been in information technology more than 20 years. And obviously in that time, I've covered a pretty wide ranging set of roles. And so for BOS as an organisation today, that means that they're putting someone into the Chief Operating Officer role who's had experience in marketing and sales and, of course, in service delivery. So it's that range of skills that I think Michael felt was useful to bring onto the company at this point in time.
Yeah, definitely. And so as far as news releases concerned, what's the next sort of major milestone you're looking forward to at BOS Global Holdings?
Yeah, so May is a big month for us, Justin. We'll be bringing to market BOS Time and also the BOS 360 Work Patterns platform as a service. And so the organisation is absolutely focused in on that objective. But also we're at a point now where we are looking to build out our channel strategy. And so we're looking for consulting organisations, professional services organisations that can see the value in what we're doing and joining us on that journey to bring these solutions to market.
Yeah, and like I said, Automate was one of the last things you've released or launched, and that's one of the products, isn't it, in BOS 360. So how many products go into BOS 360, Mark?
So right now we have the two, Meet and Automate. Clearly, time is the next major facet of that solution because that provides the evidence-based collectors and the sort of reporting tools that allow us to really look at what people are doing with their days. To make that product real, though, we need to be able to deliver it effectively, and that's the platform as a service that we've spoken about. And certainly, when you get the chance to speak to our Chief Innovation Officer, there are many more opportunities for us to use that platform to build out the BOSS 360 solution.
Yeah, yeah. And do you feel at the moment you're in quite an exciting space to operate in?
Yeah, look, it's I spoke to Michael earlier on today, and it's for anybody who's ever felt swamped by meetings or swamped by email or struggling to get to the real job that they do, it's this sort of workspace and with knowledge workers that, you know, we really believe that we can make a difference to the way that people understand what they do with their time. And I think it's a very interesting market, a very exciting market for the future knowledge workers.
Yeah, well, I know as part of, I work in a different part of the country to the rest of the guys at Vox Markets, and emails are a problem, you know, they are. And I mean, there's always, you know, historically, last few years, I think now, British workers' productivity has shown poor results across the international stage, you know, so there's always an issue, you know, as far as the UK is concerned. I'm sure there are many countries like that who are suffering on productivity terms. So it's always handy, you know, having these bits of software. Go on.
Yeah, look, without a doubt. I mean, for those of us who've been in the industry for a period of time, you can certainly see the way in which the sort of ubiquitous communication platforms have changed people's priorities. And I read an article recently. I should be able to attribute it, and I do apologise to the author. But essentially making the point that very few people's jobs are actually doing email.
Mm-hmm.
But most people's jobs are doing something creative or inventive or serving a customer, and really I think that's just a really good example of how we need to look at the way in which people work and help them understand how they best use their time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, every day on the podcast, Mark, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets. For someone now listening right now who's not following BOSS Global Holdings, could you give us three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on BOSS's page, please?
I think there are three reasons leap to mind. I think the first is one about innovation, and I think we're planning to do some pretty interesting things with technology. So if you're technologists and you're interested in innovation, I think that's a good reason to follow us. I think the second reason is I don't think that there is a business department, a business or a government department anywhere in the world that's not trying to do more with less. So if you're interested in thinking about efficiency and productivity and what's available to help you achieve those sorts of outcomes, that's a good reason to follow us. And I think finally, it's to reiterate one of the comments that I've made before. I think that if you are finding yourself struggling to get through the volume of information that you've got to deal with, whether it's trying to find a document, whether it's trying to find a piece of information, whether it's trying to get through your email burden, whether it's actually trying to focus in what your real job is, I think it would be interesting for people to follow us and see what we're bringing out into the market to help people better use their time.
Exactly. Mark, good to chat to you, and I look forward to speaking to you again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
That's my pleasure, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, small-cap aficionado, commentator, podcaster, blogger, it's Doc Holliday. All right, Doc?
Yes, very well, thank you. How are you today?
Yeah, not too bad. Where are you? You sound like you're in the toilet at the moment.
No, I'm actually in the lounge.
Okay, all right. Okay, so what's happening? What are you looking at? Stocks on your radar? What's happening?
I think it's a case of revisiting some of the things that we've already talked about. I think last year we talked a little bit about Galileo Resources. That company was trading at about a penny early on in the year. So I've got to try and sort of recall, but I think it was sort of March, April time. That's done particularly well. It's trading up towards sort of 3.5-4 pence now, so some great returns for people who invested in that. It was bombed out, sort of blown out mining company with assets, copper assets on the book. So this was a company that Colin Bird, who's been involved with a bunch of different companies on AIM, had not only supported for quite some time as a director of the business, but also put quite a substantial amount of his own cash into it. So again, it was one of those situations where the directors had got pretty decent amount of skin in the game. And I think whilst lots of other stocks were rallying at the time, Galileo Resources was one that was sort of quite stagnated. It's been lagging with reacting. And I think those that were patient with that will have done quite well. So, you know, nice to see companies like Charac Gold, Galileo Resources, businesses like that, that took a bit of time to get going and perhaps didn't get all of the bells and whistles and all Action Jackson are the market supporting it. But in reality, over the testament of time, it's proven to be quite lucrative for investors in those both of those companies, in actual fact.
Yeah, it's gone up, hasn't it? That's the kind of thing right now. It's like, it's funny, isn't it? People get excited about a stock when it starts rising, they start buying in. And I did it recently. I didn't look at a chart at all. I just like the fundamentals of the company. I think you've got to marry the both together, haven't you? If you like what's happening there, if you like the fundamentals, what's going on there, shareholder ownership, whatever it is about the company you like, you've got to look at a chart, because if it's spiking like crazy, you know, you're not going to buy that company at the best price, you know? And so always refer to a chart, I think, is one of the handy things. That's where, you know, people, I know technical analysis has its knockers. Some people say, oh, it's not worth it. But I think you've always got to look at a chart to see where share price is on a company, you know? And otherwise, you're not going to.
You go back to the 80s and the 90s and stuff like that, and people were trading on what they call the high and low board. So they'd look at the high and low of the day. They'd look at the high and low of the day. The previous day, and they would be able to sort of come to a conclusion as to where they thought that the value lay in that company. Now, you know, that's about as basic as things can be, but people used to, you know, adopt that high and low board as a great source of information for trading.
Yeah. What else are you looking at there on the small cap arena?
We talked about Oxford. Again, I don't want to just keep talking about things we've already mentioned, but it's always important to sort of revisit and see where things went. I mean, Oxford Biopharma was a company that was very well supported with cash. It had got a market cap at about 28 million, I think, when we spoke about it, and they'd got 26 or 27 million quid in the bank. Or, you know, again, I'm sort of just skating over this, so the facts could be a little bit hazy. But the principle here is that, you know, in a 3 to 6 month period, it's gone from 1.752p up to sort of, I think it's about three and a half or something like that again today. And the reality of this is the company at the time, back in October last year, had suggested that there would be some news flow towards the end of the year and there'd be additional news flow in Q1. Obviously, the market is starting to warm up to that. The fact that it's got such a strong balance sheet and relatively low market cap, given institutions were buying this at 10 pence, it's quite interesting to see when you look at the shareholder register just what type of institutional support it's got and the types of cash that they were prepared to pay to get involved in the story. So, again, it's one that's performed really well. We talked about the rationale back in, I think it was sort of October, November last year, or certainly recall making quite a bit of comments about it myself. And since then, you know, things have gone really, really well. So, you know, there are always going to be losers out there in the market. And there's nobody I know that can trade these small cap markets and not sort of take a kick in every now and again. But, the reality is, if you box clever, you look to try and ride as much of the win as possible. And, you know, you look for stocks that perhaps others aren't looking at, then that to me is where the value lies. It's companies that have either got a decent management team. I know you've started to sort of look at this quite a lot yourself recently, bit of skin in the game, and can generally get the traction in the market. If there's a little company there and it's not doing a great deal, most people are put off by it. They almost think, it's not performing for a reason. But I often find that everything's cyclical and that corner will turn. And I think one of those companies actually is Concha. Been talking a little bit about it over the last 12 months. Took a trade on it, spoke with Zach Mayer not long after I took that. Went from sort of half a penny or this point, spot six, up to about 1p or 1.2. It was really sort of nice technical sort of pick. And I kind of think it's ready to go again. I think that there's quite a lot of trading in round numbers, so there's block trading. I'm not talking about volume, the volume's quite thin, but the trading that's happening is, it's almost like blocks of stock are moving around, and whenever there's any type of secondary interest in from the retail, the price sort of spiked up a couple of weeks ago towards sort of, I think it was spot 7 to spot 825. It's quite a big spread, but it just jumped up on very little and it's worked its way all the way back down to this point. And we're just, like I say, we're seeing a bit of stock in blocks trading hands. Got no idea what's going on other than the fact that Chris Akers has been out in China, I think. And he's been quite animated over EVRH and a number of other companies that have done particularly well. So I just think, again, I know it's one that I've mentioned on the podcast already, but I genuinely believe that assuming the company don't go out there and do a fundraiser or anything sort of drastic like that, that that Conch's got real potential at this point.
Yeah.
And that's at 0.60p.
Okay, cool. Let's mosey into Paul's calf, shall we, for a sit down and a chat? Because I know you didn't mention it on your blog yesterday on Vox. Now I've taken a bit of stock in this a couple of weeks back, and just for the simple reason, you know, it's about management. I see it as almost Metal Tiger Mark II here, what Paul did with that. And Paul came on the podcast, you know, loads of times about Metal Tiger before it got any traction, and it was about, and I was buying the 0.8 and all that, and I thought, is this ever going to go anywhere? And I thought, you know, it's not going anywhere, and it seemed to be very busy. The market cap then was about sub 3 million, you know, in Metal Tiger. And I kept holding, and all of a sudden it did blast through the 1 pence level and kept going up to like 6.5 pence, I think it peaked at. But now Paul's got a bit of a track record before, but now it's more well known. And I think he's going to do the same kind of thing, do you think? But now it's getting a bit more traction quickly in CAF. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, look, I've actually got a bit of stick because of the headline, you know, on the article yesterday. And I think it was one of those pieces that, whilst I knew it was perhaps not going to be the most popular at the time, that it would be something that people could refer back to. So, you know, I'm hoping that it starts to make a bit more sense as time goes on. And again, that is the problem with, you know, blogging, being a writer or talking about stocks as a commentator, is that, you know, you're almost need to be able to think and forecast and predict what may unfold in the future as well as what's happening today. If not, all you're doing is sort of acting and chirping like a budgerigar rather than actually having a freedom of thought. So, you know, the situation with China Africa, indeed, I mean, you know, Paul was an active investor in the markets when I knew him before he joined any of these boards. Quite a meticulous guy when looking at balance sheets. He was involved with a group that removed the management team at ECR Minerals originally. He's gone in there. Things didn't go well. I got a bit of stick for comments that I made about Paul and Clayson at ECR. I don't believe he particularly did a great job, but I think the actual, you know, the developments in Metal Tiger did really well. The problem comes where I supported it back in 2014. Talked a lot about the company back then. Interviewed him a number of times. You know, lots of chat. Really endorsed it. I think the famous quote back then is, I think the company's got a really bright future. And didn't it just have a bright future? The problem lies is when your opinion starts to change given the valuation of a company. When it got to 30 million, Metal Tiger just wasn't worth it. And when you looked at the assets, Botswana had not got anywhere near where it needed to be to give Metal Tiger that valuation of 30 million. The Thai assets were similar to these lithium assets that they've just taken on at China Africa. And I just didn't believe that the company warranted a £30 million market cap. Now, going over to China Africa Resources, you've got a company that's gone into that safe haven of Botswana again. He knows that he can get some traction and the market likes it, investors like it. So they've gone out, they took an investment in Botswana, and then they've gone and added a lithium asset. The lithium asset is always going to be interesting because there's a lot of momentum in that sector right now, not just in the UK, but globally. People seem to forget that. The rest of the world has been reacting to lithium a lot quicker than we have over here in the UK. And I can see that being one of the big promotional sort of points that we hear lots more of from lots of different people. So I think the lithium assets are always going to interest investors. The issue that I have is we're talking about extremely early stage lithium asset. We're talking about a deal that's constructed in a way, as you would expect from an astute accountant, where they're only going to give the money to the company to take them incrementally through the stages, and at any point should they believe that this isn't worth it, they can cut, run and move on if things don't work out. So quite a cleverly and well constructed idea. Again, the problem is we'll get to a point with China Africa at a £3 million market cap. You know, I'm not necessarily a buyer, but I wouldn't be a seller either. You know, it's one of those sort of situations where I could genuinely see that as they start to progress these assets and perhaps make additional acquisitions, that you'll start to see the valuation start ratcheting up. Now, if we get to 10 or 20 million pound market cap, I'll be writing articles or on the podcast talking to you saying, well, you know what? Yeah, you could see where there was some value here and naturally the reasons behind it, but it's all getting a little bit ahead of itself. And that's generally where you come in for a little bit of criticism, and you know, investors just generally don't like it when you make those comments. And I appreciate that. But given what happened with 88 Energy, given what happened with ECRO, Metal Tiger, all of those companies lost, you know, 50%, some 80% of their valuation. And I think it's important to be able to point at where the downside is as well as the upside. But at the minute, China, Africa very much seem to be going in the direction upwards rather than down. There may be a choppiness. There's a potential for a secondary fundraise. These companies always raise a bit of cash into some positive liquidity because they want to go out there and build the company and grow it. So it becomes a self-prophecy. But yeah, I mean, I think it's great. You know, you've got some nice assets out in Botswana, the Kalahari copper belt there. And I think, you know, you've got some lithium assets. Stick something else in there that's a bit interesting. I know there's a lot of talk about uranium, things like that. If they were to parachute in some uranium assets, you suddenly got a tiny little company with a tiny little market cap with three really quite interesting assets and a dynamic board of directors. You know, what's not to like? That's not to say it's going to go up in a straight line. And I almost sound like I'm talking myself into becoming a buyer. I don't even own a share, but it's an interesting one. I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is that thing of you've got to be prepared to change your mind when a company becomes highly valued compared to what it has. Because I always remember saying to Paul, he was one of the regulars on the podcast when I first started almost, and I kept saying, you're doing a lot here for a market cap of 3 million, Metal Tiger. You've got a lot going on, you know. And I kept repeating that over and over again, and it did hit that one pence, kept banging his head on that. And if you see China Africa now, it's banging his head a little bit on 4 pence. But like I said, they start creating value in the company. The market gets a bit of traction there. It goes up, shoots up beyond where, you know, you could say it's valued at. It's overvalued, then it comes. And you've got to be prepared to change your mind when you see that the market cap is inflated. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Because you get people that are blind, aren't they? Advocates of the company. And whatever happens, they'll never, ever sell anything. You've got to judge a company on its value. And that's basically what it comes down to, isn't it? So I think it's valid. You've got to be prepared. You see these people, you know, into these companies, they're fanatical about one company, and you think, you can't just be fanatical about a company. You've got to judge it on a weekly or daily basis, you know, and to be prepared to change your mind. I think that's part of being a half decent investor, isn't it, really? You know,
I think it is. I mean, you know, I think what we have to appreciate is, you know, we've been at this quite a while. I've been doing it longer than like quite a lot of people that I come across, and you know, unfortunately, the bit that we forget is people come into the market and go out of the market on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis. And it's almost like there's new people lining up to get involved with companies. So naturally, they subscribe to that sort of long-term outlook, because naturally, they may have invested into BT or BP or, you know, whatever it might be, boohoo, you know. But you know, these people generally will invest into these companies, and they would take a long term outlook, and then they come and sort of mosey on down into the junior markets, and they think that they can apply the same strategy, and almost believe that a share that goes from 1p to 10p, I don't mind if it goes to 5p, because I'm confident it's going to go to a pound. The reality is the number of companies that actually make it the full term are very, very small. So you've most definitely got to be boxing clever. But I think there's a, I don't think it's a case that people just become deluded. I actually think that it's a process of courtship, really, where people, they get involved, they they're new to the market, they get into the story, they go to the presentations, they read all of the literature out there, they follow this general theme that's starting to be, you know, be propagated around into the marketplace, and they're believers, aren't they? And I kind of think one of the classics, and we saw it with CloudTech, we've seen it with a few other companies, is the minute you get people photoshopping images or putting, you know, company logos onto rockets flying off to the moon and things like that, I mean, that to me, that is the biggest sell signal you could possibly get. So the minute that people start photoshopping things and the story just, you know, loses reality, that you've got to be considering what the motivation here is to do that, and it's bonkers, it's crackers. But again, I don't think that people are as disingenuous as perhaps they seem on the surface. I just think they get enthralled into the whole story, and they can't sort of separate facts from fiction. And often just don't have the confidence, actually, of the conviction to be able to take a gain or to not buy something. And again, that's all down to people and experience in the market. And I think the longer people involved in the market stay, the more that they realise that they shouldn't be buying anything with a company logo on a rocket. It's just a joke, isn't it?
But I'm just jealous of their Photoshop skills. I wish I could do some of that. there we are.
No, it's funny you should say that, because I was asking a guy about this the other day. He said, you know, how do I make one of those Donald Trump book things? You know, yeah. I saw everybody's seen these GIFs, right? The tweets and stuff like that with a dinosaur or whatever it might be in the book. I'd really love to do that, but yeah. You know, you can probably have a lot of fun with it.
But there you go. Go on. I just think this is, at the moment, like I said, you know, CAF there is with Paul Johnson there. You know, I think attempted to do Metal Tiger Mark II here. I think it's an interesting player, like sub 3 million market cap. You know, if he brings more projects on, it's going to get more interesting. And but there we are. Marvellous, dog. Listen, we'll have to go to a Photoshop school together, I think, and, you know, make ourselves look sharp there, because we're looking at old school here. But maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. Here we are. Cheers, dog. Spell us, speak next week.
Take care, mate. Thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is successful private investor Smudge Dan. You're right, fella?
Very well, Justin. Thank you.
Yeah, and how's it going for you at the moment? The market's quite buoyant, isn't it? The small cap market.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's been a fantastic start to the year. I think there's a lot of stuff out there that's gone up a hell of a lot. It's getting quite tough actually to find things that are offering good value now, because everything's gone up. So I'm going through my watch list, and it's becoming more and more difficult.
Yeah, well, I asked the same thing of you know, the Mad Stalk the other day on the podcast. I said, do you get a bit weary at these times when you know, quite a lot of people seem to be doing quite well, because that can't last for long, can it? You know.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think, you know, I'm probably holding less stocks now than I have done for the last couple of years, I think.
Oh, okay.
Because I've just, you know, I've just taken some money on some of those that have done well, and just sitting there and you know, waiting for opportunities. But it is becoming more difficult to find good sort of undervalued plays at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what stocks are you looking at? What's on your radar at the moment?
Well, we talked about URU last month, and also React Energy, and you know, both of those have gone up over 100% since we talked about them. So I'm still holding on both of those. Have very high hopes for both of those. I think they could both push on. I mean, React's come back a bit since the EGM approval to change their name to Ektek. And we're just waiting to see what Ebios, who have taken 51% of the company, what they're going to do going forward. But I've got really high hopes for them. So.
Yeah, well, yesterday it was one of the most followed stocks, ETQ, and I thought, what's that? And I wasn't quite aware they changed their name. That's kind of popular out of nowhere, I thought. But I did look into it. Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. It's React. Okay, that makes sense.
Exactly. And they've got some Chinese money that's coming in there. So I think that, you know, that's sort of, let's see what happens with that one. But I'm pretty hopeful on that. And then a couple of I've been either buying or adding to my position to our Infrastrata.
Yeah, I've seen this mentioned a few times. What's the deal there?
Yeah. So I went to the AGM a couple of weeks ago, and there was a presentation that was done at the AGM, which I thought was very interesting. Certainly, the size of the potential project, you know, in comparison with the current market cap, which is tiny at the moment. You know, I think this one could have some legs. So essentially, they are in the process of trying to build a gas storage facility called Island McGee, in Northern Ireland. They're the only AIM quoted gas storage company.
Yeah.
And you know, previously, I think that they were also involved in sort of oil exploration as well. And now they're just purely focusing on you know, getting this facility up and running.
Yeah.
They've got to something called a FEED, which is a front end engineering design and commercialization.
Yeah.
Which is going to cost about $6 million. They've got $3 million of that through $2 million through sort of EU grants and another $1 million from the contractors that are going to take on the project. Mm-hmm. And they need to find another $3 million. So I think that's kind of left where it is at the moment because the question is, you know, where is this $1 million going to come from?
Yeah.
And I think that the initial plan that they're going to do is try and get some sort of EIS stroke VCT money in here, which, you know, if they manage to succeed then obviously it should be sticky money because of the tax breaks, and they need to hold on to it for 3 years. And I think then once that happens, we could see quite a big uplift in the price, because the net value of this project, even at the moment at the low end, is 38 million.
Okay. I was going to ask that, once they get this going, if they do, what's the potential here? So, okay, so we can see the upside. But these kind of things, when there's a funding gap like it is at the moment, they can present an opportunity. Because I did see the results a while back of Infrastrata, and it did spike up, didn't it? Then it almost comes back down. You think, why is it coming back down? And obviously that's the reason why, because they've got to find this money. But, I mean, you know, if it's commercially viable, like any company, it's a business. They will find it, you know. If people are going to get a return on their buck, they will find the money, won't they?
Yes, exactly. And you know, the storage of gas is becoming much more of an issue in the UK, because the main facility, which is called Rough, mm-hmm. Which takes up, you know, a large percentage of the gas storage for the whole of the UK, you know, is under consultation at the moment. And one potential outcome is that they could close it down, because it's quite old and the upkeep on it is huge. And obviously, were that to happen, then there would be a huge need for gas storage. The Isle of Magee project would actually, if it goes ahead, would be the biggest project in the UK.
Wow.
So it's a very interesting play. You know, it's high risk, high reward. But I think that the risk reward ratio is a good one for this one. So
yeah, yeah.
There's an excellent presentation that was done at the AGM.
Mm-hmm.
So I've posted that up on the Vox Markets website. So if anybody wants to have a look at that and see what they think. But so that's something that I've been
marvelous.
Building a position in over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's certainly come, like I said, come back down. It's initial interest gone up at two big days then of you know, interest, and then it's come down a little bit, just under sort of one pence, 0.848 or 0.85 and all that. So it's not by any means, you know, realise the value there, potential value. So it's a good play looking at the charts there. So what's the other one, Dan, you're looking at?
Yeah, the other one is a company that you'll know, because Trevor Brown came on the Vox Markets podcast a while back now.
Yeah, I was genuinely perplexed by this. Because Trevor came on, and I thought, very interesting, sharp guy there, very intelligent, and he came on, but the price didn't react very well to it. And I thought, what?
Yeah.
It was on my watch list for a while, but I don't know. Tell us about, you know, take us through what they're all about, Braveheart Investments.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so it's Braveheart Investments, the ticker is BRH, and they are an investment company. Trevor took over the helm a couple of years ago, having previously been a non-exec director, and he's now the CEO, and he really has completely transformed the kind of ethos of and the approach from the company. Mm. Historically, they were, you know, a typical investment company taking relatively minor shares in some pretty uninteresting companies, and the share price responded accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
What Trevor has done is basically tried to, you know, look at the asset base that they've got, you know, realise those investments that are on there where he possibly can, and there's been a couple of realisations which have turned in a nice profit, but also look at sort of companies that are blue sky potentially, but very importantly, are at the point where they are commercial, where they are revenue generating, where they're, you know, at break even, close to break even, or profitable. And he's invested in three such companies, which, you know, really have the potential to be quite spectacular, I think. And we're talking about a company here in Braveheart that, that, you know, the market cap at the moment is about £4.5 million. There's 27 million shares in issue. They managed to turn a profit for the half year of 475,000. And they've got cash of 1.33 million. So I just think with some of these investments, I mean, clearly, you know, they're not all going to fly, but I think there's the newer ones they've gone into. One in particular is a company called Kirkstall, which has a product which is called, it's sort of to do with it's called organ on a plate, so it's or organ on a chip, so it basically could replace animal testing for cosmetics and other things that, you know, are used for animal testing. So if that gets off the ground, obviously the potential for that globally is just massive. So
I remember him saying this about organ on a plate. I thought, what? That doesn't sound attractive.
Yeah, but, it doesn't sound particularly
appealing. Yeah, but you can see the commercial potential there, because I did look into the figures of it. So yeah, it could be one of those things that are massive, but definitely worth a look. But it's had a bit of a rally lately, but it's almost like now hitting those previous highs. It was hitting back in September last year, so it'd be interesting to see where it goes from here, you know?
Yeah, well, there's been a seller. So, you know, pretty much every day when there's ever been any strength in the price, someone has been dropping 10,000 shares here and 10,000 shares here. And so I'm assuming that is probably the same seller rather than different sellers. So the thought process is that that's probably someone that may have been involved in the management team before and is taking the opportunity of the price strength to exit. Marvelous. But I just think if one of these investments goes the way that I think that they possibly can go, I mean, you know, the returns here could be quite spectacular.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, two stocks. So Braveheart Investments, BRH, and Infrastrata, and that's INFA. And if you go on Vox Markets page there, Dan's pushed the presentation there as well. Dan, thanks for that, fella. Speak soon.
Cheers, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Proxarma, PRX. At four, it's a new entry, DX Group. That's DX Dot. At three, Hydrodeck. I covered those with Nicola earlier on in an earlier podcast on the chart, HYR. At two, newly listed, Eco Atlantic Oil. That's ECO. And number one, I talked about them with Doc just earlier on, China Africa Resources, CAF. All right, here are the top five most liked RNSs on our platform in the last 24 hours. At five, it was Boss Global Holdings, board changes. I chatted with Mark earlier on that appointment. At four, Zenith Energy, ZEN, workover rig begins operations at well M195. At three, Thor Mining, THR, Spring Hill Sale and Pilot Mountain Drill Program. At two, Horizonte. That's HZM, Shard Capital Issues Research on Horizonte. And number one, the most liked RNS we've ever had on Vox Markets has come from Asia Met Resources, ARS. Asia Met Feasibility Drilling hits more high-grade copper at BKM. Worth checking out, I think. Ticket for that, of course, is ARS. Thanks very much for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.